a Tuesday luncheon. These things take place every Tuesday with just lots of guest speakers. I met most of you in the registration line last week. It's just good to see your interest in mission work, a real need in Synod. And as I just watch all of us eat this food, it's really a reminder of how blessed we are in America with so many good things. And it's the same way with the gospel. We're very blessed and we're really saturated in America with the news of Jesus Christ. But the world not only is very hungry in terms of food, but also for the gospel. Where we're so rich, they're so very poor. And that's really one of our great hopes of Synod. And as I talked with you, I really got that Synod would be very much an equalizing force and is used by the Lord to share the gospel with all nations. And that's one of the real reasons for Synod existing. So that was our main motivation behind inviting Dr. Preuss, the president of our church, to come and share a little bit about the new mission work that is taking place within our church body. So without any further ado, I'll just ask Dr. Preuss to come up and share with us. Dr. Preuss?
Well, thank you very much. It's a pleasure to be here with you, and I hope you'll keep right on eating. I'm used to having people sleep in front of me, so if you're doing something as worthwhile as eating, I certainly don't want to interrupt that. I get even with them, and sometimes I sleep in front of other people too, so just go right ahead with your meal. Let's see the hands of the new students that are here for the first time. Well, now let's see the hands of the old students, if there are any. Yeah, well, I see that the zeal is highest in the beginning class. That's usually the case. I was pleased that the chairman spoke of the food in such complimentary terms. I hope he'll be able to say the same thing at the beginning of the winter quarter. At Springfield, we used to have a dish they served that they called breaded nothings. I'm glad that people like the food and that they're interested in mission work. There are many things I'd like to tell you about this matter, and I'll try to cover a few subjects, and then you can go right ahead and ask questions on anything you want to do. We have kind of a division of labor in the Synod relative to the matter of mission work. Obviously, mission work begins at home, and every congregation is supplied with evangelism material. Every pastor is given instruction somewhere along the line, and there should be an ongoing, continuing education in how he can carry out his duties in the area of evangelism. This is not very well adhered to. Annually, about half the congregations in the Synod confirm one or less adults per year. I hope you'll remember that and will not follow in the footsteps of pastors who have established that kind of record and congregations, because the Synod could be growing by leaps and bounds if every congregation would confirm as few as five per year. And I don't believe there's any area where something of this kind could not be done if we really got at it. So I'm not really coming before you this morning with a grand and glorious story of success. Furthermore, it's my contention, after observing this matter for a good number of years, that the Synod is not a particularly mission-minded church body. We are quite complacent, we're quite smug, we're quite content with the way things are going, and a survey we had recently conducted among about 2,000 people, I think 1,800 of them were lay people, including 200 of the 1,000 delegates at the Dallas Convention, revealed some startling facts relative to the lack of knowledge that our people have regarding the mission that this church is attempting to carry on. For example, we had more people who thought we were doing mission work in Kenya, where we are not, than in Argentina, where we've been since 1905. And so there, when I talk to you as future pastors, I'm hoping to enlist your support for carrying out the mission that Christ has committed to his church, both at your own local level, so that you don't join that 50% who are doing little or nothing, and also to informing your people where work is going on and the kind of work that's going on and that needs to be done. Now, in some ways, the work of the Synod is rather impressive. We're carrying on work in between 30 and 40 different countries of the world. We're spending about $10 million at the synodical level, most of which goes for foreign work. At the coming back to this division of labor, work goes on at the congregation level, work goes on at the district level, and that's what we traditionally have called home mission work, whereby congregations are being established at the rate of between 50 and 100 per year throughout the U.S. and Canada. But to give you a little idea on that, for example, last year, the Lutheran Church of the Philippines, a church body supported by our mission gifts, that church founded over 40 congregations alone, and they have about 20,000 members. And our whole synod, with about 3 million, started under 100. So the need for mission work among our fellow Americans, our fellow Canadians, and throughout the world is enormous. As you well know, there are about 1 billion Christians in the world of all denominations, and the population of the world is growing at a considerably higher rate than the Christian population of the world. So we have a tremendous challenge ahead of us. And we live in an age when we have mass media, we have rapid communication, we have unlimited financial resources, and we have a great deal of human resources. I'm sure you heard all the statistics about the marvelous growth of this seminary with nearly 550 students, Fort Wayne Seminary with over 500. So the Lord is supplying workers, but whether these workers have the zeal and the zip and the dynamics to get out and do something in the face of this huge, unchurched world in which we live, this is another question. Now, I don't mean to paint a gloomy picture. I can paint a very bright picture, but I do want to give you the facts and the figures in the case so that you do not think that the millennium has arrived or that the rapture is about to take place or that you've arrived at the point where you can follow the example of that man in the parable and sit back and say, soul, take thine ease. This is not the day for that. I think it's a time of enormous possibilities. I've traveled to almost every one of the mission fields operated by Synod and have had a chance to talk with people of all kinds of cultures, ranging from a place like Japan, where the Christian population is about half of 1%, and secularism is on the rise, to a place like New Guinea, which a generation ago had no Christians to speak of, a few around the coast, and today, out of 3 million people, about 80% of them are Christian, a nation that has been won for Christ within the lifetime of, even most of you people, and certainly within my lifetime. And we can see both success stories and failures at the same time going on in this world. The battleground is being drawn very, very tightly in Africa. It's kind of interesting if you see some of these television extravaganzas on Africa, that virtually every one of those spokesmen for the revolutionary movements have been educated in mission schools. Many of them claim to be Christians and are confessing Christians. And yet Africa is facing a bloodbath that may take as many as 10 million lives, while oftentimes Christian, black Christian is pitted against white Christian in this great revolutionary movement that's going on. The I just returned this month, within the last month, from New Guinea, which is probably the most difficult place to get to on, I guess, any civilized place, or not civilized, but populated place on the face of the globe. And I was kind of shocked to realize that it took me 44 hours to get from the highlands of New Guinea back to the dead center of Lutheranism, with all of the modern conveniences of jet airplanes and all the rest. That's how isolated that place is. And yet, just think, some of your fathers may have been war veterans in New Guinea, and when they went there, they went by troop ship and some 10th-rate airplanes that are now in the Smithsonian Institute, and yet that's probably the most difficult place to get to on the face of the earth today, where there is any significant population. Now, we had a meeting there of the presidents of the what we call partner churches, churches affiliated with the Missouri Synod. And these represent Europe, North America, Central America, South America, Asia, in various parts, and Africa. Happened that there were a good number of Australians also present in the New Guinea meeting. And it's very interesting to talk to these people. There are some parts of the world where virtually nothing is going on, where the church is conducting a totally bootstrap operation, and where every year the statistics get worse and worse and worse. This is particularly true of Western Europe, which I think today can probably be called the world's largest foreign mission field, even though you have state churches and departments of religion and theological schools and all of the trappings of religion, but maybe 2 or 3% of the people attending church. I think my most vivid experience of this was in talking to a man who had been a chaplain, a Danish Lutheran chaplain in Thule, Greenland. And I can assure you that the people in Thule, Greenland are not suffering from too much competition in the way of nightlife, high living, fancy restaurants, nightclubs, or whatever else may get in the way of us here in America. And he said he served there for one whole year with 1,000 Danes, and not one of them showed up for one single service. All of them pious, God-fearing, baptized, confirmed Danish Lutherans. That's the worst story I ever heard. We don't even have much success in talking to the Europeans about things like evangelism, or some of them do some mission outreach in foreign countries, but they do not succeed, seemingly, in getting their own people to attend church at all. That's one story. I mentioned Japan. The Philippines, on the other hand, a country that was nominally Catholic although with a Catholicism that's right out of the 14th century, the Philippines are growing at the rate of about 15% per year, both among in Catholic portions and in pagan portions of the country. Korea is growing at a rate of about 10 or 12% in the Christian population per year. And our church, which for many years was kind of an orphan and didn't do very much, is really beginning to take hold and starting to function. Now, when you get out into the ministry, for example, you're going to be approached by people in your congregation who say, let's personalize our mission. Let's do something we can see. Let's adopt a missionary, or let's do something. For example, Korea, the representatives of the Korean church came to Dr. Westcott and myself, the new mission exec, and they said, we need 3 plots of land, which we can buy for $10,000 apiece. And we can put a church on that land for $20,000 apiece. Now, some of you within 5 years of the day you graduate will have congregations whose treasuries will have more than the price of land and a church building in a place like Korea. You're going to be amazed, especially at your ladies' aides, how much money some of them have got salted away. Get it out of there. Make use of it. In many of these countries, we're working with them on a matching fund basis. The Filipinos say, send us $300, and we'll put up $300, and for $600, we'll build a church, a functioning, operating church building. It is happening. Brazil is our... Brazil is still formally a district of the Synod. It is the largest district geographically, making up a country almost as large as the U.S. It has 180,000 members, which is makes it almost the largest of our districts. It has 1,500 congregations, which exceeds anything in any of our U.S. districts, and it was started in 1900 with almost nothing, and today is establishing about 20 or 30, sending out 20 or 30 candidates, each of whom starts 4 or 5 or 6 churches per year. This is going on, and they have virtually a waiting list at the seminary to get in. And their pre-seminary, which is like our synodical prep schools, is filled to the brim. So things are happening there in this country that's developing, opening new areas, building in new roads. They built a highway, I think about 3,000 miles in length, from the eastern coast or along the mouth of the Amazon, way up to the Andes, running the north border of that country, and they're doing just like the railroads used to do here in this country 100 years ago, where you remember every 4 miles they had they started a town. And this is the reason why if you drive across North and South Dakota, you can always tell how far the towns are because they were started by the railroads, and they're every 4 miles, every 8 miles, that sort of thing. And things are really going in some parts of the world. In Brazil, for example, we have no missionaries. All of the workers there are native Brazilians speaking the Portuguese language. Almost no work is being done any longer in German. And as this church has become indigenized, as it has used its own national people as clergy, it has started to grow like a weed. Had the Missouri Synod been run from a place like Leipzig for 100 years, and had the pastors of the Missouri Synod been trained in German and come over here, we would today be a church probably of 50 or 100,000. But our early fathers went out and learned the English language. They became acclimated to American ways. And today we are, of course, a totally American church. We may still be named Schwartz and Schmidt and Schneider and so on, but we are American. And this is a great reason for the success of the Missouri Synod in growth. And we're trying to get these partner churches also to become indigenous. This has been a policy of the Mission Department and of the Synod to try to get them to do their work in the language of the country, which is not always easy. For example, Nigeria has 500 languages. Trying to get them to translate material. The Lutheran confessional writings have now been completed in Portuguese, and we've been there since 1900. It's taken 80 years, you might say, to get the Lutheran confessions into the language of the people. It's not yet completed in Spanish, although we have 5 different Spanish operations: Argentina, Venezuela, Central America, Mexico, and I've forgotten what the other one is, maybe North American, plus doing work in Uruguay and Paraguay and all kinds of other places. But it's slow, it's very difficult. I was in Nigeria about 3 years ago and traveled with the president of the Nigerian church, a black man, and he had to use exactly the same interpreters I did. The only language with which he can function is English, and nobody functions very well in English, and so there are tremendous problems. Also, nearly all of these churches suffer from low salary scales, lack of any kind of pension, lack of any kind of church extension program, and lack of money for capital. Now, I'm talking to you as future pastors, trying to get you a little bit interested and informing you a little bit about the work that's going on. We are going to need a limited number of missionaries. However, the policy is to try to develop the nationals into doing their own work. However, this is very difficult. You and I come out of a tradition. I always say that my ancestors were Lutherans even before the Reformation. And most of you can trace your ancestry at least back to Martin Luther. And but here you get a person who was born a pagan, who has no background. His daddy was not a preacher. His uncle was not the president of the district. And he did not attend Concordia Seminary with all of its glorious traditions and pictures of Walther and all that sort of thing around. And so we have to first make Christians out of them, then we got to try to make Lutherans out of them, and then we also have to try to make church administrators out of them. We have to keep people's fingers out of the till, and this is not always easy. We have to try to develop congregational life, evangelism, stewardship, and all of these kinds of things have to be done in one generation in a world where the element, and especially in the third world, where the element of nationalism is predominant. The first question is not, are you a Lutheran? It is not even anymore, are you a Christian? The first question is, are you an African? Or are you a Japanese? Or are you a Korean? We had our Japanese leaders come over here a couple of years ago, and they said, Japan can build automobiles, we can build electronics, we got a strong yen, that's no pun on that, and we have a strong economy, and there is no way in which we are going to say that of the church that it is run from the USA. It's going to be a Japanese church. And they packed up 7 missionaries and sent them home. Whether they're able to carry it, whether they're able to live up to their made-in-Japan policies, is another question. But it's the kind of thing that's being said. So that to be a missionary today probably in many ways means keep your mouth shut, not talk. I had a man in the office this morning from one of the partner churches. He says, this church has got to get some help from the U.S. And, of course, the vision looms, missionaries. He says, we need a business manager, we need a lawyer, and we need an accountant. This is the kind of person that we need medical people. We need education experts. We need people who can train partner churches in how to administer a church. We need people to help in developing evangelism programs. I don't think that we're going to be sending out a great number of young fellas. I think we're going to have to send out experienced people, people who maybe have got 15, 20 years on their backs, who are willing to give up the comforts of a nice parsonage in Ottumwa, Iowa, and maybe live in a very difficult situation in order to help a church develop in the areas where that church at this particular time needs the help. So I want you to be very interested, and I hope that you are. I hope that some of you will give thought. Now, for example, we're having this big push on Hispanic ministry. 20 million of them in our own country, and 400 million of them south of the border, and it is as open, it's like looking at some of these apple trees, right? I was out the other day, and the apple trees were almost totally red, just ready for the plucking, and or going into a beautiful melon patch in August, and it's there. The people are there, the needs are there, the opportunities are there, but it's going to require a lot of help from the home base, a lot of prayers, a lot of people looking for talent, people who can do specific things, and an opportunity such as I don't think the church has ever faced. South America is more open than at any time since the days of Pizarro and Cortez. Asia is open. Africa is going through a battle for its very soul. When I was a young guy, a little older than you, we were told that the battle for Africa was between the Muslims and the Christians. And that was totally turned around so that the Christians were completely on the offensive. Now we face communism. And don't kid yourself, it is a very live threat. A very live threat. There are 40,000 Cubans in Africa today. And I have great confidence in the power of the gospel. But as one man said to me not long ago, an African, he said, you've been talking for years about starting work in Angola. He said, forget sending an American. But he says, I can get in there. I can get into Angola. And we're starting a job outside of Ghana right now, in which the missionary is going to be a Ghanaian in the country of Togo. This is the kind of thing that's going on. The other day, a Chinese pastor stopped in my office from Taiwan. He said, I would like to go to Paraguay and work among Chinese-speaking people in that country, working under our Argentine church. This kind of cross-fertilization, using of nationals to do a job that 10 years ago we would have said, we'll send in a missionary and ship one of you guys off to learn Chinese or Spanish or whatever it might be. It's a kind of a new era, and it's a great time to be involved in it, and I welcome you into an exciting aspect of your church's life. Okay, that didn't allow as many time for questions as we'd hoped, but do you have any questions, comments, arguments, howevers, or whereases? Fire away. Yes, sir. Well, what I'm trying to say is that everybody has got a job. Everybody in the Missouri Synod has got a job. beginning with your wife who talks to the woman next door and invites her to church, with you as a local pastor, with your congregation, with your district. Now, the district, for example, say you belong to the Northern Illinois district. Northern Illinois district is responsible for opening missions in Northern Illinois, for deaf work, for campus work, for hospital work, for prison work, for everything goes on in Northern Illinois is the responsibility of that district. Then the districts gather together as synod, and the synod takes on the work on behalf of all of them in foreign countries. Foreign mission work is a specific assignment of the synod at large. Home mission work is done by the districts, and then there's really not much going to happen at the district level unless each congregation is working. That's what I meant. Anyone else? Yes, sir. Yes, I forgot to mention that. We just opened a new one in Liberia, West Africa, right on the borders of the country of Sierra Leone. And we're very, I personally think that before very long, you'll find most of the emphasis being in Sierra Leone, a country that has no Lutheran church. We're working among a tribe called the Mende tribe, most of whom live in Sierra Leone. But because of certain conditions existing, we were able to, much easier to make the beginning in Liberia. We're also opening in Togo. Probably that'll be done within the next 6 or 8 months. We look upon West Africa, where we're strongest, namely Nigeria, and a little operation in Ghana, as the part of Africa that really ought to be our area of concern. There are other countries like Ivory Coast and several countries right in that area that have no Lutheran work. Nobody seems to pay any attention to it. The work is easiest in the former British colonies because of the language. That English is still kind of the basic language when they got all this tribalism. And with the good start we've got in Nigeria, where we have about 40,000 members and some workers and some church organization structure, what we're trying to do is to set up a partnership arrangement whereby Missouri, Nigeria, Ghana together kind of spread out and expand the work. We've got to do something about theological education. We've got a seminary in the wilds of Nigeria. It would be like the Missouri Synod trying to run its whole operation with a seminary down at some place like Eureka Springs, Arkansas, or something of that sort. We've got to get a central location. The people are moving into the large cities just as they are here. And we've got a lot of problems with it, but I'm very optimistic about Africa, at least that part of it. Yes. The number of men that would be sent into foreign mission work would be infinitesimal. If we got up to a dozen a year, that would be a large number. And as I say, I don't think they should come only from candidates. The home missions, I don't think that the lack of manpower prevents us from opening stations. I think it is the lack of money to make these initial investments, which now are up to about $250,000 to start one. The synod is a very peculiar thing. It's like a rubber band. No matter how many vacancies, every church is always being served. You never hear of it. Once in a while you hear, I heard one the other day in Iowa, where they have a high pay scale, I don't know what's the matter, which is calling its 20th man. Now that's the story of the vacancies. That's not very common. But with the good enrollment of these two seminaries, I would say that beginning in about 1980, we should begin sending out a couple hundred men a year, and that's going to help. We have not expanded ourselves out of candidates. What we've done, for example, there used to be about twice as many vicarage assignments. These congregations have called assistants. And I think some of these congregations could go without an assistant for a few more years. It wouldn't kill anybody. The size of the congregations having assistants has constantly gone down, down, down. In other words, you used to have an assistant if you had 1,500. Now you have an assistant if you got 500, that kind of thing. And while there is complaint, and quite obviously it's a justifiable complaint, when a district president tells me I've got 10% or 20% or even in some cases 30% of all the parishes vacant, that's serious. But it is not at the desperation stage. The places are being served. And I think we've got to think in terms of expansion today just exactly as much as we did 10 years ago. Let's not be discouraged by the fact that we've got vacancies. Some churches thrive better under vacancies considering the operators they've had. Anyone else? I don't know how about we're doing on time here. Mr. Chairman, are you ready to make your announcements? I'll be glad to stick around if any of you have personal questions. It's been a pleasure to be with you, and I hope you'll all have a marvelous year and all make great preachers. The Lord needs every one of you. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Burke. Dr. Preuss, we thank you for sharing with us and just giving us a feel for the direction our synod is taking, and we pray we'll continue to take. Before you leave, I just have a couple announcements and fill you in on some things, and then we can all split and go back to class. You know, today we're talking about just seeing the church work and equipping people to go out and win other people to Jesus Christ. But you know, before we're ever going to be able to do that, we really need that assurance within our lives that the Lord can use us to do the same thing. And I know that that assurance really helps studies go better. It makes us more motivated to study and a little bit happier about our whole life here at the seminary. So I'd just like to remind you of the next upcoming activity here on campus. And that starts next Saturday, this coming Saturday morning. We're going to begin some campus evangelism training. And it's just a brief program. And like I told some of you, it would take about 6 hours of your time in total. The idea is we would canvass some of these homes around the neighborhood of the seminary here, sharing the gospel. And so we'd spend an hour and a half this Saturday morning doing a little training on how to work through an opinionaire and use a marked New Testament to share the gospel with that person. Then Pastor Warnick has cleared his calendar for 3 weeks, and he's the pastor of Ladue Village Church. And what he'll do is he'll follow up your positive calls with a own call on his part, inviting those people personally to his adult information class. The idea then would be that you'd finish your hour and a half of training here, and then you would team up with a partner. And of course, wives are more than welcome to come, and your wife could be your partner if that would be what you desire. And you can go out and you'd do about 3 hours worth of canvassing on your own time. Then we'd have like an optional sharing time midway between this three-week period, and then 3 weeks from next Saturday, we'd come back for a final wrap-up time. So it's a three-week program, won't involve at the maximum 6 hours of your time, and it's just a chance for you to really see the Lord work through you so you have some real confidence that He can use you to win others to Jesus. Okay, and then just one other thing, and we'd like to encourage you to feel free anytime to come on Tuesdays for the programs. Next Tuesday, we have Reverend Baert. He's a popular speaker here on campus. If you've never heard of him, he'll really encourage you along as far as evangelism work here in America. And then the following Tuesday, we'll have Dr. Kolb, who's in charge of Synod's evangelism program, and he's agreed to sit down with a Jewish rabbi and do a little dialogue on Synod's evangelism program to the Jews. So feel free just to come any Tuesday, 12:15, and we're glad you came. Dr. Preuss will be around if you care to eat a little lunch and visit some more.